Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yes, they are. Doug and Jeff, seconds away. 10th caller to begin the radio show today gets a wonderful gift certificate from Sorgles at 412-922-1020. And Doug and Jeff, we'd love to hear from you. We've got that number to dial in to get all of your questions answered at 866-391-1020. Here they are, Doug Oster, EverybodyGardens.com, and Jessica Walliser.
Good morning. I am Doug Oster from Everybody Gardens and the Tribune Review.
And I'm horticulturist Jessica Walliser.
More bulb planting for me yesterday, Jess. That's what I did. I got about 150 left, and I'll be done until the nurseries start giving their stuff away. So
your video was pretty darn funny.
Thank you.
If listeners, if you have not gone to Everybody Gardens and seen this black and white silent movie that Doug made, it's only, what, 2 minutes long?
1 minute.
One minute long.
Had to get short enough to get on Instagram. Come on, Jess.
It is. It's very clever and very funny. We shared it on the Savvy Gardening page and got lots of great shares and comments on it. Everybody was like, "This is so much fun."
It was
pretty
fun.
Great.
That was when I had 600 to plant.
Remember to hydrate.
What else is going on in your garden?
I've got bulbs to plant, too. Somebody sent me some muscari, some really cool different varieties of grape hyacinths, and I still have not gotten those in the ground. So
you have time.
It's going to be nice today. I think, you know, it's going to be cold, but the temperature is going to be
nice. Oh, I planted something new that's old. I don't know if you know it. I don't know the plant. They're called silver bells.
Hmm.
I don't know. They came from Old House Gardens.
Okay.
And I just saw them in the discount rack at the end of the season here, and I said, oh, that sounds kind of interesting. Little white flowers. So I should have looked them up and ran it by you. You'll know the plant when you get the official name.
Interesting. Silver bells.
Silver bells.
Hmm.
We'll look it up in the break.
All right. There you go.
Where are you going to put your muscari?
So I think I'm going to do them so we can see them out the back door, probably along the top edge of my retaining wall.
Will deer eat them, probably?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think I can hide them in there. Well, you know, famous last words with the deer, but I'm pretty sure I'll be able to hide them in there.
Yeah, I did one of those 50 deer-resistant plants, blah, 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 you know, but I put the caveat always in there, like, they'll eat anything.
Yeah.
So, in my mother's garden, they would eat the first 50 to the ground. In mine, they don't touch it. So 50 deer-resistant plants in my garden.
Yeah, because you never know. I mean,
each
herd feeds differently. And my thing is, if you ever question whether or not they're going to eat a plant, keep netting over it. You know, I have lots of individual plants that are netted in my garden, and I redo
as
the netting every spring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love, we talk about Hinoki cypress. It's one of my favorite evergreen plants. They love it just as much as I do. And
was one of the ones on my list.
Really? Oh,
yeah.
No, they love mine. So I have my Hinoki cypress is perpetually covered with a little piece of bird netting. Nobody even knows that it's there because it's sort of, you know, you have to walk right up to the plant to be able to see it, that it's there. And we have a juniper on the side of the house. I think it's called Hetzel's juniper.
Also on the list.
Well, a lot of junipers are deer resistant, but this Hetzel one is a softer juniper. The needles are not quite as pinchy as some of the other types of juniper. And this one in particular, they really seem to like. Plus, it's on the corner of the house, right by they walk by this spot every day. So
old,
I have that netting around.
Old dried leaves was on the list. Is that one deer resistant?
You know, it's funny. Old dried leaves. We laugh at that, but we used to have that maple in the front yard, and I have a video of a doe eating the fallen maple leaves from beneath the maple tree. She was sitting there and grazing on the maple leaves.
Now the bucks are all over my property, and they're just focused on one thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're just running around and being crazy and eating, and
yeah,
you know, didn't get my hydrangeas covered like I should have.
Oh,
because they came in, they nibbled the foliage. I'm like, oh, I got to get those surrounded before they get to the
they got the buds.
Yeah.
And that was that.
Yeah.
There's not much you can do.
I keep moving my hydrangeas into the vegetable garden that's fenced in, just because I don't, you know, I should have put fencing around those. I have fencing around other plants, and I know I should have done it, and I didn't do it, and now I have to wait another year.
Well, you know, there's a lot of gardeners out there that now they're listening, and they're like, ooh, yeah, I guess I should have done that, too. And it's just one of those things that time slips away from
at
you.
At least I protected the new young trees from the rubbing.
Yeah, that's good, because that will kill the tree.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the deer come along and they nibble the, you know, tips off or whatever. A lot of times the plant will survive, especially if you protect it. It's really when it's repeated years of defoliation like that that it can actually kill the plant. But if it's just once, you can protect it. It's okay. But, man, with something like that, that's it.
Another plant that's on the list is mountain laurel, and I have a mountain laurel that has the fencing around it in my garden. So
yeah, and that's toxic. I mean, that's poisonous to them.
It's young deer nibbling on the buds. They don't know any better. They don't have anyone to show them what to eat, so they're like, oh, look at this.
Yeah.
Oh, these buds. These are really soft. Oh, I don't feel so good.
Right. There you go. Hey, have you started on your leaf cleanup yet?
I was working on that yesterday.
All right.
Much less leaf cleanup now after you told me I don't have to take it off the beds or anything.
Yep. Well, that's the thing about this, you know, leave the leaves movement. I mean, it's a very good thing for all of the insects and everything, and you can leave them in your beds. You know, there's even talk now about people are saying, you know, leave them on your lawns.
What's the advantage of leaving them on your driveway, though? That's what I want to know.
Well, that gets slippery, and that's, you know, that's the problem.
Think?
It can get quite slippery when you have them piled on your driveway.
I got the driveway clean, and I got a path on the patio to get to the garden.
There you go. Just cleared the path. Yeah. Well, and you'll eventually have to clean them off the patio because they'll, before the spring.
Before it gets wet. If I could just get to them before it rains the next time. We'll see.
Because then they're super heavy. They wait till they're wet.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so what are you guys going to talk about? We got about a minute before the break. What's the driving theme behind today's show?
Well, just kind of hang here and just talk to each other, see how you're doing.
No. We want to talk about composting today, if we have time. And certainly we'll take callers' questions as well. But it's a great time of year to start a compost pile, and we should
leaves.
Talk about that.
And leaves. What to do with all those leaves?
Leave them go.
No, but, I mean, if you do blow them, if you do have to get them off something, they shouldn't go to the landfill. We'll talk about that.
All right, 866-391-1020, 866-391-1020. And the winner is Barbara from Pittsburgh of that $25 gift certificate from Sorgles. All right, here's Doug in Greensburg for Doug and Jess, the Organic Gardeners. We'd love to hear from you. Lines are open. You can get through if you dial now, 866-391-1020. Hey, Doug.
Hey, good morning. How are you folks today?
Good. Doing good.
Good. Okay. Well, it's kind of a three-part question concerning a new lawn. I put a lawn a week ago today, and it's in a very flat area with relatively poor drainage. I have 4 good inches of a good topsoil on it, and I want to know, number one, I put a real heavy bed of straw on, or a heavy top dressing of straw after I planted it. Should I leave that on all winter if the lawn doesn't come through?
My guess is at this time, you know, and I've done this before when I worked for a landscaping company. We sowed grass seed really late in the season, and it would just sit there in the winter, and then you actually have it germinate first thing in the spring, and it does beautifully. It could also, if the temperatures warm up again, you could actually have germination occur this fall. The soil is still warm, so it wouldn't be a bad thing if that happens. The straw, when you say a real thick layer, how thick do you, like, how thick is it?
I would say it's a good 2 inches thick.
Okay, so usually when we use top dressing over grass seed like that, we're talking just a really thin layer, just enough to hold the seed in place and keep erosion from happening. Like, 2 inches is pretty thick on top of grass seed.
You kind of try and keep the seed wet. That's part of its, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, plus, I would think it would have insulated for the winter or kept the ground a little warmer. Maybe it would get some quicker germination. Mm-hmm. That was my thought process.
Yeah, 2 inches is pretty thick, though. So it'll be interesting to see how it does. I wouldn't do anything to it at this point. I would just let it go. And you might see some spotty germination this fall. You might, you know, might wait till the spring. But leave that straw in place. I wouldn't bother removing it at this point. If you get no germination by the time we have maybe a week or two of warmer temperatures next spring, then I would go ahead and overseed. And you wouldn't have to remove the straw if you don't want to. You could just broadcast the seed. Because by that point, it's going to really be matted down and sort of partially decomposed. So I wouldn't worry about it too much if you don't have, you know, if you need to overseed it in the spring.
Okay. And what about watering now? Should I bother? Because I looked at the soil yesterday. poked it a few places, and it's still relatively damp from the snow melt.
Yeah, and I think you're fine at this point. The only thing I would say is if it germinates this fall, then yes, you will have to water it if we get warm or dry period of time. If it doesn't germinate this fall and you have no signs of germination, just leave it go, don't water it, and then it will germinate in the spring.
Okay, good.
Okay,
thank you.
Good luck. And you know what's interesting is I've actually had some beautiful lawns that when I worked for the landscaper that we put in. That
seeding
we put in,
like this
in the
time
fall.
Of the year.
Yep, seeding this time of year. And it's
what
hard.
Did they put over that? What did they put over the seed?
We would do compost. We would do compost or like a little thin layer of mushroom soil over the top of it instead of straw because it's a little easier for the grass seed to come up through that. The problem with doing that, though, is the ground is bare all you know, through the winter. And so you can get if you have a sloped area, there can be a lot of erosion. There can be, you get a lot of soil washing away. So there's definitely downsides of it. But if you have a relatively flat area and you want to sow the seed now, it's okay to go ahead and do that.
So let's talk a little bit about leaves. We want to leave them on the bed, leave them in the garden. But if we are removing them from certain areas, what should we be doing with them?
So if you're taking the leaves off of your lawn, one of the easiest things to do is just use a mulching mower, right, to mow over them and chop them into little tiny bits and redistribute it on the lawn.
Well,
and
actually,
that's great.
Is that what you meant by people are saying leave the leaves on the lawn?
No, some people are even saying now that just leave the leaves on the lawn altogether. But I think they're thinking of, like, you know, a big lawn with one tree in the middle of it. Like, in your case, you're surrounded by trees.
Oak trees, which is even worse.
If you leave all of those leaves on your grass, it's definitely going to kill your grass. And we have places at our place that are the same way, where the leaves kind of blow and they collect along the fence, and it will kill the grass. So you can use a mulching mower. If you do want to rake it up. Don't send those leaves to the landfill. You can use them to start a new compost pile. One of the things I love to do with them is I build a cylinder of 4-foot-tall wire, like chicken wire or box wire, 4-foot-tall cylinder, probably about 3-4 feet wide, and you pile the leaves in that, and that's actually a great place to grow your potatoes the following year. You can fill up, you know, put some compost in there if you've got a neighbor with, you know, horse or cow manure or a source for that. Pile up those leaves. You could even put some untreated grass clippings in there. So it sort of makes like a temporary compost pile that then you can grow potatoes in the next year. I've even done pumpkins that way.
Could you just do it with shredded leaves, or would you have to have something else?
I would say if it was shredded leaves and it was a couple of years worth that it was really broken down, but I like to mix it with other things if I'm going to grow potatoes in it. If you're going to do pumpkins, you really want to wait till it sort of rots down till next spring and then sow some pumpkin seeds in it. You can have pumpkins that way as well, or winter squash. Sort of a cool way to reuse those leaves to make organic matter to feed your plants.
And I just have shredded leaves, since I have so many leaves, next to the compost whenever I throw in my stuff from the kitchen. I throw in some shredded, you know,
leaves on top.
Brown leaves.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it is a great time of year to begin a compost pile, primarily because we have all of this, you know, we have the yard trimmings, you have the leaves, you have the spent plants. If you pulled your spent plants out, if you cut things down, I don't cut things down till spring anymore, but, you know, all of that plant
but
debris.
But stuff out of the vegetable garden.
Oh, yeah, stuff out of the vegetable garden, yeah.
And annuals and all that sort of thing.
It's a great time of year to get started with it. Now, did you turn your compost all winter? You don't turn it at all,
never,
ever.
Okay. Never touch it.
All right.
It's too hard to get to, and it's just almost impossible. I just have to let it rot down.
Yeah. The slow, cold.
Yeah, I've got some rotating bins in there. I'm just not using them right now.
Yeah.
I've got those in the vegetable garden.
It's funny, because no matter how many compost bins you have, it seems like you never have enough. But then when it's all rotted down and you go to get rid of it,
there's
like,
have enough.
No, yeah, there's like nothing there. It's amazing how much it really breaks down and the great humic properties that it can add to your soil. And
I need to
really
redo mine just to make it easier to get in there. Because when I do get in there, it's just a hassle. You got to pull screws out and the whole bit.
Oh,
you know, yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's just, you know. And so that's why when I get in there, I get as much as I can out. But if I was in there all the time, I probably would be, well, I got some out, you know, kind of mixing it up and stuff.
Mm-hmm. The 3-bin ones I used to have made out of pallets that were sort of zip tied together. We had 3-bin system, and they were open-sided. So, and what we did was we put all the materials into the first bin, and by the end of the season, that we had just collected through the whole season everything, and then we would turn what was in that first bin over into the second bin, and then start adding to the first one again the next year. And by the time it flipped down into the third bin, it was pretty well done, and then we were able to harvest and compost. And that was a good way to keep track of what is more finished and what is brand new materials going into the bin. And that, it makes the harvesting a lot easier. If you're always putting new on top of the pile, you really have to kind of fish out all the good stuff from underneath, where this way kept it separate.
It's just amazing. You know, how long have you been doing it?
Composting?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, forever.
Same here.
Yeah.
And the amount that you don't take out to the landfill, that you don't take out to the curb, is just astounding. At least half of what I used to goes right to the compost pile. I did get a question the other day from my wife, like, why don't you take the compost out there when you're going to the garden? Is that a question?
That is a good question. There was a question mark at the end of there, I think.
Order?
That was, well, you should. That's also, I agree with Cindy on that one. You know, you're on your way out there. You might as well pick up the compost bucket and take it out.
Those are two women that care a lot
about
you.
That's like when you put the toothpaste on the steps. That means if it's sitting there, the next time you go up the stairs, pick up the toothpaste and take it upstairs.
Why it's there?
Yes, that's why it's there.
Well, my toothpaste is not where I left it. That means somebody's in my house. We'll take a break. Stay with us. All right, 10th caller right now, 412-922-1020, wins a $25 gift certificate from Janoski's in Clinton. Let's say hi to Lynn. She's been waiting patiently. How are you, Lynn? Welcome to KDK Radio. Doug and Jess, good morning.
Oh, good morning. I'm doing fine. You know, I have been wanting to use leaves for compost in my backyard. Here's the problem. I've got a couple trees in my backyard. One of them is a crabapple, and it's been dropping leaves throughout the summer, and I'm raking throughout the summer for the past few seasons. I got the tree treated a couple times, but then I gave up on that because it could get pretty expensive to continue getting the tree treated. And I'm wondering if, you know, eventually I'm just going to have it cut down. But my concern is about the leaves. Are the leaves themselves diseased, and should I be using them for compost?
That is a really
that's an excellent question,
Lynn. Excellent question. And what likely is happening on your crab apple, it's a very common pathogen. It's apple scab. And it causes the blemishes on the leaves, early leaf drops. Sometimes they turn sort of like a yellowy orange before they fall off. Very, very common on older varieties of crab apples. Some of the newer ones are resistant to apple scab, but some of the old school ones definitely get it. When you're using diseased leaves like that in a compost pile, there is a risk of transmission. However, if you mix it with other ingredients and you turn your pile regularly, it typically gets to a high enough temperature that will kill the disease spores for something like apple scab. But if you just leave them lay on the ground under the tree, that's where they easily overwinter and then reinfect the tree next year. But crab apples, old crab apples are so prone to this pathogen that
mine gets it every year.
Yeah, you can do everything right, and the tree is still going to end up with apple scab.
But I still enjoy the blooms, and the tree does okay.
Well, one question, what other ingredients could I mix in with the leaves?
So you want to do basically a mixture of brown ingredients, which are carbon-rich ingredients. That would be things like straw, shredded up newspaper, your fall leaves, if you use unbleached paper towels or coffee filters, that's all sort of your brown carbon-rich ingredients. And you want to have twice as many of those by volume as you have of green ingredients, which are your nitrogen-rich ingredients. That's things like trimmings from the garden, grass clippings, untreated grass clippings, if you have them, kitchen scraps, manures.
Yeah, the only kitchen scraps that they say not to put in there are like oils and meats, that sort of thing, because it can attract rodents. I have friends that out in the country, they just put everything in because it all composts. But, you know, you don't want possums and raccoons digging in your compost.
So,
well, thanks for the advice. I'll try that.
Okay, you're welcome. So, I mean, starting a new compost pile is not a hard thing to do. It is. It's a good question, though, that she brings up in general about diseased plant foliage. So, you know, how about if you have botrytis on your peonies, or you have
blight on your tomatoes,
early blight, or powdery mildew on your squash plants? You know, can all of that go on the compost pile? And, you know, the short answer is, yeah, it can, but you do want to make sure that at some point that you're turning your compost regularly, because that is a hot method of composting, and that introduces oxygen to the microbes in the center of the pile, and they're the ones that are going to process out those diseases. And I believe that the temperature is 165 degrees, and you want it for about 14 days at the center of the pile, and that's what you need in order to kill those types of pathogens. If you're doing the just pile the stuff up in the corner of the garden and letting it basically cold compost on its own, the pile probably doesn't get hot enough to kill those pathogens. So it depends on how you compost, how you're going to use that compost.
And then something like tomatoes, those vines, it's going to take longer for those to break down than, you know, just some leaves off a squash plant.
Yeah, so if you can shred the stuff first, if you have like a leaf shredder or a compost shredder, or even some people will put the materials in a old trash can, like a Rubbermaid trash can, and then use like a string trimmer in there to chop the stuff up into smaller pieces. If you do that, it's going to break down faster.
When I harvest mine, a lot of times I find forks in there.
Like metal forks?
Like metal forks.
They just went in with the kitchen scraps?
Yep.
Or are you eating in the garden and just tossing them over your shoulder?
Out they go. More so when I had kids living at home.
Yeah.
I'd just end up in the compost.
That's really
funny. 2 years later, I'd be like, oh, a fork.
That's funny. My friend was telling me the other day, she's got three teenage kids, and she was talking to them. Was talking at dinner about how she doesn't know what happened to all their spoons. She's like, my spoons are gone. There's no little spoons. And the older brother looks at the younger brother and he says, I'll be right back. And he goes out into the garage and he comes back with like a dozen spoons in his hand. She's like, where did all these spoons come from? He's like, well, I eat yogurt on the way to school every morning. And I just throw the spoon in the back of the car. So yours are in the compost pile. When you're a teenager, they're in the back of the car or in their bedroom somewhere probably. I thought that was really funny.
So in the bulbs that I've been planting, I've been planting all sorts of little ones because they're so much easier to plant.
That's true.
That's why the ones left, 150 daffodils are left, you know, because I got all the little ones planted yesterday, the Gloria Snow and the Silver Bells and the Pushkinia and crocuses. I'm still using that trick. It works for that first year of soaking my crocus bulbs in Bob-X or some kind of repellent. And yes, your fingers smell awful after you're done planting, but at least it keeps the critters off them until they bloom. Yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder if you could save a little time. Can't you dig your daffodil holes, right, with your auger, put the daffodil in the bottom, put a little bit of the soil back in the hole, and then put a small bulb on top?
Probably. You know, I'm not that smart. I actually planted a bunch of small ones right on top of where I knew I just planted daffodils.
Yeah.
But I didn't have
your soil's nice and loose then too, right?
I didn't have the small ones at the time, so if I would have planned it out and thought about it, but it was all done in a manic, like, okay, I got 3 hours, I got 600 bulbs, let's get to work.
And I know that you usually with your, you know, bulb planting, you wait till the last minute because that's when things go on sale.
Exactly.
So you're like, okay, ooh, they have this on sale, I'm going to buy it, plant it, and then go back for see what else is on sale.
Well, this was online actually. I'm still waiting for the nurseries to really. I've made my rounds and said, hey, when it's all over,
let me know what you
keep me in mind, because if you don't, you know, whatever you don't want to pot up for, like Easter flowers, like crocuses don't work too well for them for that. So
right.
I might be able to get some crocuses. We'll see. But, you know, at the end of the season, I was getting emails from a couple different sources. Old House Gardens was one of them. They have that, you know, that Dutch auction every day. It's over.
Mm-hmm.
Every day they discount and until they're gone, till out of the warehouse. So I had three orders with them, and then the bigger ones, Van Engelen, you know, they do 50s and 100s, and that's inexpensive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they put everything else on sale where I got 100 really beautiful whether it was daffodils or tulips, whatever it is, for about $20. So, you know.
That's a good deal.
Yeah. And the quality of the bulbs of both those companies, you know, I've planted 100 Tahiti daffodils, and probably 25% of them had three noses.
Oh, wow.
Not just two, but three. And so it was just this huge, I'm like, man, the quality of these bulbs, I would have accepted just everyone to have one nose.
Right.
But, you know, have that many with three and then a bunch with two. So every nose means a flower, well, hopefully a flower. But so I get a lot of excitement out of planting bulbs. I really do. I don't think it's a lot of work. I love doing it. And I just think about the spring, man. You know, what the spring is gonna hold for us.
866-391-1020 is the number to dial. Congratulations to Sandy, a winner of that gift certificate from Janoski. She's from West Mifflin. Stuffing recipes coming up next hour with Joe and Frank Dantisi on the Coons Cooking Hour, KDK Radio. All right, we've got our lines available if you want to talk to Doug and Jess about anything on your mind in the way of gardening. We would love to hear from you at 866-391-1020.
So we talked about the kind of bulbs that we're planting outdoors right now, but there's another bulb we need to talk about that grows indoors.
Yes, if you have an amaryllis bulb that you have kept alive from last year, perhaps it bloomed around Christmas time of last year, and when you brought it inside, you should have put it in the garage, stopped watering it, let the leaves die back. If you have one of those bulbs right now, in the next few weeks is the time to pot it up. Bring it, you know, out of that old potting soil, pick a slightly larger container, only by an inch or so in diameter, and pot that bulb up so the top third of the bulb is up above the soil surface, the bottom two-thirds of the bulb is down below the soil surface, and bring it up, water it into some light, and keep your fingers crossed.
You know, I still have a poinsettia.
Do you really?
That, from the poinsettia series.
Okay.
You know those poinsettia ones? They're some kind of cross or something, and they have pure white, and they have some pink ones too, but it's the only pure white. And for some reason, that one, for me, does so much better indoors than a conventional poinsettia. That's why I'm always buying that poinsettia series. I should have taken it outside, you know.
And so it's been inside all summer?
Yeah, it's been on the windowsill the whole summer.
Okay.
You know, barely getting any attention. You know, just watering once a month, maybe, probably. You know, like every time I'll look over, I'll be like, uh-oh, I better get some water on that plant.
Now, are you going to do the whole, you know, minding the day length and everything to get it to bloom?
Never lost its color, really.
Oh, it still has the colored bracts on it.
Yeah, it has like a white.
Wow.
Like if I were really taken care of it, would be filled with white bracts. But it just says one white bract and, you know, barely hanging on.
Yeah.
I'll probably dump it when I get a new.
When you get a new poinsettia. Oh, yeah. But it made it this far, right? That's the thing.
True.
It made it this far. You wanted to keep it going.
All right. Bernadette, up next for Doug and Jess on the Organic Gardeners. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a bleeding heart still in the pot. Can I plant it or is it too late?
Oh, boy.
What's the option, though, right? If you don't plant it...
I'm not going to make it...
It'll die.
Right.
I'm not going to take care of it.
So, I mean, if you don't have a place where you want it to be forever and ever, I would sink the whole pot into the ground, maybe in the compost pile or the vegetable garden or tucked behind the house somewhere. Just, like, at least get the roots insulated by sinking the pot down in the ground.
Okay.
But if you have access to the spot where it's eventually going to go, I would go ahead and plant it there, and then maybe if you can have a couple of evergreen boughs, and sort of lay it over the root zone of the plant to make sure that it's a little added extra insulation there. And evergreen boughs are good for that because they allow, you know, water to pass through, and then they allow air to, you know, get down to the soil. And that would be a little bit of extra insulation through the winter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I also have a poppy. I got a very, very tiny plant at early summer, and I grew it in a pot. And I think last week you said, you know, you could... put these things, keep them in the pot. Now, it's a pottery pot. The bleeding heart is in a plastic pot.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is it an oriental poppy, or do you know what type of poppy it is?
No, I don't.
Okay. So I would plant that as well. I would treat them both the same. I would assume that that's a perennial oriental poppy. It could be a California poppy. It could be an annual poppy. I don't know. But I would plant them both either by sinking the pot temporarily for the winter or by actually putting the plant out in the garden.
Oh, okay.
And I would do that soon because it's been awfully cold temperatures. So
right.
Today would be a good day. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, great. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, from the Doug Oster text line, my friend Fred actually sent me a picture of his amaryllis all getting potted up and says,
go, Fred.
Fingers crossed.
Go, Fred.
They look pretty good. Looks like they're going to do that thing.
It's like, what, 50% of the time that you can get it to bloom again?
It's either going to be nice, big, strapping leaves or beautiful buds.
Right.
Those look pretty good, though. I think those are gonna bloom. We'll
see. Our fingers are crossed for Fred too.
Right. All right. Well, actually, yours aren't. But
well, they are now. There
okay,
you go.
There you go. Okay.
1 minute and counting in the broadcast. Here's Tina in Dayton, Ohio, for Doug and Jess. Hey, Tina, you got about a minute. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm actually in Dayton, PA, but I plant garlic bulbs because I'm using a walker now, so I can't plant them in the ground. So I planted them in window boxes on my back patio. And I covered them with straw and everything like I always do. How often should I water them, and how much should I water them?
Maybe just once a month. You want to definitely keep them on the dry side. The worst thing that could happen is that they can rot, and that's what we're most concerned with. So keep them on the dry side. Just stick your finger in there and see where you're at. You just want it to be a little bit moist but not soaking wet.
That's a new suburb of Baden, Dayton, Ohio.
Everybody
would want to know that.
Want to drive into
Baden,
work.
Yeah. Baden.
I mean, how do you get Dayton, Ohio on the screen you're from
Quite
Baden?
A commute.
Yes, it
Quite
is.
Quite a commute, boy.
Frequent flyer miles. Only on the Rob Pratt Show. Take us home.
Remember, the Organic Gardener is always aimed to create a better place to garden.
And a safer place to live.
And from Kissimmee, Florida, Joe and Frank just showed up. So, boy, I'll tell you, they're coming from all over the country.
Drive too.
Yeah, I know. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take a break, and we're going to get ready to do it again next hour. Stuffing recipes. That's your favorite thing, too, isn't it?
You're right.
Is it garlic stuffing?
There's definitely garlic in it.
All right. Stay tuned, folks. Coming up to Cooking Hour with Joe and Frank's.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.